Take your Bibles this morning and turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 16. I'm going to take a break from the Eighth Commandment and go to another series we started a couple months ago in preparation for the Branson Conference. I have another conference coming up in Wisconsin this coming weekend. So we're going to pick it up with the third message of that series. I hope that you'll recall the two previous messages in this series, again, that I preached a couple months ago. 1 Samuel chapter 16, and I want to just read two verses this time, verses 6 and 7. And hopefully this will remind you where we were and what we dealt with in those two messages, at least to some extent. 1 Samuel chapter 16, beginning with verse 6, it says, "And it came to pass, when they were come, that he looked on Eliah and said, Surely Yahweh's anointed is before him. Verse 7, But Yahweh said unto Samuel, Look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For Yahweh seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but Yahweh looketh on the heart." Yes, indeed, Yahweh did. Of course, we know that following that, Jesse paraded all of his other sons before Samuel. They finally had to go out and find the one that was left, because none of the previous had been chosen. And they brought in this little ruddy shepherd boy named David. And yes, Yahweh did look on the heart of Yahweh, or at the heart, excuse me, of David. And according to 1 Samuel chapter 13:14 and the Paul's testimony in Acts chapter 13 and verse 22, Yahweh found in him a man after his own heart. This will be a man after Yahweh's heart, part 3. The previous two messages were not much more than an introduction to this series. And in part 1, I pointed out that we have probably all, at some point in time, having heard this story, read this story, or presented to us and far back as Sunday school classes when we were but little tykes, we've probably at some point during the time wondered just what it was that made David such a man, that God would identify him as a man after his own heart. Well, I believe the answer to that question, whether we figure it all out, because God doesn't necessarily spell it out and say this is why, but I believe that the answer to that question is found in the narratives regarding David as found in the Bible. And I don't think it was any one thing in particular. I believe it was a number of different things, and therefore there should be things about David that we should be able to glean out of a lot of what's said about this man in the different narratives. Therefore, I'd like with this message to go to one of those narratives about David, probably the narrative, the one that's probably most well known about him, probably more than anything else. And let's see, by going to this narrative, what it is that we can glean from it about David that might have made him, or that might have made Yahweh to identify him as a man after his own heart. Turn to 1 Samuel. Well, we're in 1 Samuel 16, hopefully still. We're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now, in the previous two messages, I alluded to this chapter and slaying of giants, but we have yet to really look at this account in any detail. Now, I'll forewarn you, this is a long chapter, 52 verses, in fact. But I would like to read the majority of it in one setting here at the beginning, nonetheless, and then we'll go back and dissect it and comment upon certain portions of it in more detail. So, long chapter, it's going to be a long reading, but don't let yourself be lost from what's found in here. And in fact, before jumping into this, I want you to do your best to set aside your present surroundings, that we're here gathered in this little upper room as we are today, and that we're 21st century Americans and all that is, and that we're dressed the way that we are, and to do your best instead to transport yourself back as I go through this account, this narrative of David's life in 1 Samuel 17, to transport ourselves back in our minds as we read this to that field of battle. And at that time in ancient Israel's history, do that with me now as I read this to you. And we're going to skip around just a little bit. I tried to delete as much as I can to shorten it a little bit, but not very much. 1 Samuel chapter 17, beginning with verse 1, it says, "And now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoko and Azekah and Ephes-Damon. And Saul said to the men of Israel, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. Boy, they're ready to fight. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. I wonder if that's not what David aimed at. Just because we're not planning to comment on it later. The target was basically probably a shield, a round shield, and when he wasn't in use, they flung it on their backside is what that was. Verse 7, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Can't you just hear him, and how the tone in his voice? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. Jump down to verse 15. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem, and the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. So 40 days they were on each side of this valley, and the Philistine giant named Goliath would come down 40 days in a row, morning and evening, saying the same thing. Come on, give me one man. Interesting that nobody was willing to go to fight yet. They really wanted somebody to take up the challenge, didn't they? All right, what verse was that? Verse 40 days, verse 16 and 17. And Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren. Jump down to verse 19. And now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went at Jesse. Now let me back up there, verse 19. I didn't notice that. It says, Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. I've never thought about that, but maybe there was some battle, some skirmishes going on those 40 days. And yet, you know, they were always trying to send out Goliath to put an end to it. Maybe it was just a description of the fact that they were in the valley. I don't know. But there indeed may have been at least some skirmishes going on. And if so, it wasn't the skirmishes with the Philistines that bothered them. It was this giant Goliath that made them tremble in their hearts. Verse 20, And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and ran to the army, and came and saluted his brethren. Glad to see them. It's been at least 40 days or more since he's seen his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have you seen this man that has come up, surely to defy Israel? And is he come up? And it shall be be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And I don't think they were saying this to David, by the way, at this point. I think they were trying to beef each other up, trying to say, somebody, you know, somebody's got to take this guy on. And so he's saying, here's what God will do for the guy. Verse 26, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. You know, you can kind of imagine this too, can't you? Here is Eliab the eldest, and here is this little punk runny shepherd boy, probably his nose running and wiping it on the sleeve of his tunic, and you know, I've been there. I only had one little brother, and he wasn't probably near as young as the distance between David was and Eliab was, but I couldn't stand it when my little brother was making any noise of any kind. It was just that older, younger brother syndrome. Get away from me. I don't want you trucking and falling. I should have been proud that he wanted to follow his older brother's footsteps, but it just doesn't work that way when you're a young man and your little brother's tagging along. You know, you just want to be out there on your own doing your own thing. And so Eliab, I think, was responding in the same fashion. He says, Eliab's anger was kindled, verse 28, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? Get back there to your sheep herd, and you don't have any business being around here. I know the pride and that naughtiness of thy heart. Remember, through presumption comes nothing but strife. There was none of that in David's heart, by the way. And he says, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. Get home, you little runt, is what he was saying. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause, or is there a cause for you to say this to me? And he turned from him toward another. It didn't dissuade him. He turned to another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So Saul's saying, wait a minute, you mean there's somebody out there actually talking about something needs to be done? So he calls for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go up against this Philistine to fight with him. He had to be encouraged that somebody was finally, you know, brave, you know, talking, making some big talk here. But then the guy shows up, and it's a little ruddy shepherd boy. And he says, hey, I'm proud of you, man. God bless you. You little guy, but you can't go out and do this. And Saul said, verse 33, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he be a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, Yahweh hath delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, and he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and Yahweh be with thee. I don't think that probably Saul was all that encouraged with what David told him. You know, he couldn't tell for sure that it was true, but he probably thought, well, that's my only hope. You know, I've got to send somebody out. And if David loses, then we'll see if we can't come up with somebody else. Saul was probably at least thinking, at least I don't have to go fight the guy. Verse 38, and Saul armed David with his armor, and he put on a helmet of brass upon his head, and also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in the scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, you know, he's looking out here and he's He's not even seeing David probably at first, because David's so short, he's seeing the army. And so it says, and when the Philistine looked out and saw David, he finally sees David. And he disdained him, and he says, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of fair countenance. Looked like a little girl, about what probably Goliath was thinking. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and the beasts of the field. And then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will Yahweh deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that Yahweh saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is Yahweh's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass that when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, and the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell down to his face, upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword, and drew it out of its sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come into the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Shamir, even to Gath and unto Ekron. And we'll stop there. And I hope in just reading that, again, you were able to transport yourself back and that you could almost be there on the field, the field of battle, and to somehow in your mind's eye really envisioned this like hopefully you never have before. What a story. No. What an event. Because that match, that battle between Goliath and David literally occurred. It's not just a story. It happened just like it's related to us in the Bible. So don't let it be just a child's bedtime story for you. But instead an event again that actually took place, that should therefore challenge and should excite and should motivate all of us, no matter how old we are or how many times we've heard or read this story before. But let me begin by pointing out to you that although the clash of these two titans, two very different titans, but they were two titans. One was a physical specimen of a titan, and the other was a spiritual giant of a titan. But that the battle, the clash between these two titans literally took place. And that although it did take place, that it would not have either occurred at all, or it would have not turned out as it did if it hadn't been for the fact that David, even as a youth, or a stripling, as Saul later identifies him as or calls him, hadn't already as a young man been or become a man. A man after the heart of Yahweh. Lamentations 3:27, it says, it's good for a man that he bear his yoke in his youth. And again, this series, although certainly there's going to be nothing in it that won't apply to probably all of us, no matter what age we are, this series, God has put it upon my heart for especially the youth. It's good, Jeremiah said, that a man bear his yoke in his youth. To begin early. The yoke, and you say, who wants a yoke? Well, remember, it's got it's a two, what do they call it? Two, the yokes when they're two oxen yoke. Let me just say it that way. You know, the cry again, the Christ yoke is easy. It's a yoke, but he's there to carry it with us. And it's good that a young person take it up early. You'll be so much further ahead than the rest of us who didn't figure out things until later in life. Think of the advantage you have and run with it, even when young like David did. You know, and again, is there any question that had it not been for the fact that David was already, as a young man, a man after the heart of Yahweh, is there any question about the fact that either the event would have never occurred, Goliath would have never been killed, and who knows what would have came of it, or it would have turned out, the battle would have turned out differently. Does anybody question that that's the case? And that alone, therefore, demonstrates the importance of us seeking to be and to do the same. Because listen to me, it may very well be that the outcome of our future battles, personal or otherwise, will very much depend, or probably not will, but I think I can probably just about guarantee it does very much depend upon our hearts as well. Because God looks at the heart. We can say we can do all the physical preparations for whatever battles or whatever thing, whatever task we have before us, but God looks at the heart. And maybe not always, but probably most often, the outcome is determined by the heart of the person. Now, back to the field of battle. Wouldn't you have liked to have actually been there and to have witnessed what happened on that field of battle that day? To have witnessed David running forward to engage Goliath. He didn't walk, there was no trepidation, but him running forward to engage Goliath and then swinging his sling to have watched the stone sail through the air. You know, you can think about a football player, you know, you're in a football game and you're seeing that football going through the air and you're hoping that your guy's going to catch it. Well, this time you're hoping Goliath is going to catch it. Watching it sail through the air and bury, and watching, being there to watch it bury itself deep into the temple of Goliath. Wouldn't you have liked to have seen that giant humbled and brought down to his knees? Doesn't the Bible tell us that every knee shall bow? One fashion or another, Goliath bowed. Wouldn't you have liked to have seen it happen? And wouldn't you have enjoyed witnessing David's final act of triumph when he went and he says he stood upon Goliath and he took his sword from his sheath and killed him, put him to death, and then whacked off his head with his very sword? And some of you ladies are saying, well, I'm not so sure. Well, okay, well, at a distance maybe. Wouldn't you have liked to have seen it happen? Wouldn't you have liked to have witnessed it with your own two eyes? Well, not me. Because to have only witnessed it would have meant that I would have been and you would have been just another spectator in Saul's army, who didn't take up the cause of Yahweh yourself, and who didn't trust that our God was bigger than Goliath and all of his gods put together. Instead, I would have liked to, and I hope you would have liked to, have instead witnessed it firsthand and up close. I would have much preferred to have been David, the only man on the field of battle that day, whose heart was completely Yahweh's, who had a heart like unto Yahweh's. That's what I would have preferred. How about you? Haven't all of us who have heard this or read this story a number of times in the past, at least at some time in the past, envisioned ourselves in that place, in the place of David? Haven't we done that? Well, let me tell you, as I told you in one of the previous messages, it's not too late. It's not too late. Because I'm telling you, there's lots of giants still around. Metaphorically speaking, there's still plenty of giants to deal with. They're everywhere. But if we might possibly be used of Yahweh to slay some of today's giants, or at least to help cut them down to size, that would be good enough, you know, if I could just help cut them down to size. Well, we too, once again, must be men and women after the heart of Yahweh. And therefore, let's now go back and let's discuss certain aspects of this episode and in David's life in more detail in order to see if we can't glean some of the things from David's life and that we might apply some of those things in our own life as well, that we too might be the kind of men and women that David was. However, it seems like there's always a however or a but, isn't there? However, to really appraise David correctly and to truly appreciate what he did, we need to first size up and understand his enemy. And so the event begins. I think God obviously knew that. And so the event begins with Goliath, not David. I'd like you to go back to this chapter, back to the early part of this chapter in this account, and let's read verses 4 through 7 again, where we're introduced to this man, Goliath. 1 Samuel chapter 17, beginning with verse 4, and it says, "And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And one bearing a shield went before him." Now, any of you wonder just how big this Goliath was? Well, it tells you right there. We just read it. He was 6 cubits and a span, half a span. Or a span, excuse me. Well, all right, so what's a cubit? Well, a cubit in that day is believed to have been, or was, actually, it wasn't just believed to be, what was the distance between the average grown man's elbow and the tip of his middle or longest finger. Now, obviously, therefore, a cubit would vary some because some men, the length of some men's arms are shorter or longer than others. But that was what a cubit was. Still doesn't tell us quite a whole lot until you start measuring all of that. So how tall would that have made Goliath in feet and inches today?
9 feet, 9 inches.
Well, well, estimations range, actually. There's not a total agreement on the opinion or on what it might have been, but range from about 8.5 feet to as tall as over 11 feet tall. With most commentators and Bob Spurgeon agreeing that was probably most likely 9 feet 9 inches. There seems to be more of a consensus on that than any of the other sizes, but it could have been anywhere in between. But let's run with that. Now let's see, with that in mind, 9 feet 9 inches, let's see if we can't get a better idea of just how tall that is. Most of you have probably seen pictures of Yao Ming, the Chinese center for the Houston Rockets, who towers over most of the other professional basketball players, who in turn tower over everybody else that are of normal size like you and I. Well, Yao Ming is 7 foot 6 inches. And weighs in at about 310 pounds on any particular day. In other words, now catch this, Yao Ming was 7 foot. I mean, a 6 foot 6 inch guy compared to me is tall. I've got a 6 foot 4 inch nephew, and he towers above me. Yao Ming is a foot and 4 inches taller than, or 2 inches taller than my nephew. All right, so Yao Ming comes in at 7 foot 6 inches and weighs in at about 310 pounds. In other words, Yao Ming is 2 foot 3 inches shorter than what most commentators believe that Goliath stood at. 2 foot 3 inches shorter. And Yao Ming's a giant to the most of us today. But to really get the picture here, we need to not talk about Goliath compared to Yao Ming, but Goliath compared to David. Now, if David had been a tall man in his day, he might, if he was lucky, have been about 5'9". But the contrast between David and Goliath is even accentuated even more, being that David was not yet even a full-grown man. Now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he was just a youth, he was just a stripling, but giving him the benefit of the doubt, let's be generous and let's say he was 5'7", which would then mean that Goliath towered, loomed, if you preferred, over David by more than 4 feet. That's more than 3/4 of the height of David that this Goliath man stood over him, and who knows how many pounds. No wonder people cowered at the sight of this guy, cringed or groveled at his feet. Furthermore, in verse 5, we're told that Goliath's coat of mail, his body armor, weighed 5,000 shekels of brass. His armor weighed about 160 pounds. That's his armor, just his body armor. Now, how far do you think you would get with a backpack, let's say that weighed just a mere 100 pounds? Think you might make it 5 miles? Maybe a mile? Maybe a quarter mile? Maybe a 20 feet? Well, this big fellow battled in armor weighing upwards of 160 pounds. In verse 3, we're told that his spear was like a weaver's beam and that the head alone of the spear weighed 600 shekels of iron, which would have amounted to approximately 18 pounds. What's the shot puts they heft around? 12 pounds. And you know, they throw them. But the average man, well, those are big men. Those are the big guys at the track meets. Well, this guy took an 18, just the spearhead alone, 18 pounds. And who knows how far the man could throw it and run it through so that it never didn't bury itself, but it ran right through the man he was throwing it at. Now, I'd say that Goliath was a pretty impressive-looking fellow. Possibly or probably ugly, but striking or eye-catching nonetheless. Now, with all of that, don't you just love the way that God sets the stage? And you don't need Hollywood to get the idea that this Goliath was one big fellow and not the kind of guy that you'd ever want to mess with. Nevertheless, with all of that, I mean, there's a lot there in those 3-4 verses about Goliath. Nevertheless, we're not provided in this count with everything there is to know about Goliath. For example, we're not provided with his middle name. But I would bet that his middle name was either Leroy or John. And if his middle name was Leroy, I would bet that his last name was probably Brown. Bad Leroy Brown. The baddest man in the whole dang town. Badder than old King Kong and meaner than a junkyard dog. Don't you think? But then just maybe his middle name was John. Big John. Big Bad John. Every morning on the plane, you could see him arrive. He stood 9'9" and weighed 445. Kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John. Big Bad John. Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much. He's kind of lean and mean. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from Gath, where he got in a fight over a Philistine queen, and a crashing blow from a huge right hand set a Philistine man to the promised land. Big John. Big John. Big bad John. Then came the day when John showed up, dressed to kill, and a sight to see. Israel was a-praying, and their hearts beat fast, and everybody thought they'd breathe their last, except John. Through the dust and the smoke from this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that no one knew well. Grabbed his helmet, his armor, and his weaver's beam spear, and with a curse and a groan like a giant oak tree, just stood there alone. Big John. Big John. Big bad John. And with all of his strength and with a mighty yell, he defied the armies of Israel. Give me a man and we'll fight together, and I'll feed him to the fowls and the beasts of the field. Big John. Everyone cowered, but one. A little ruddy shepherd boy with a sling and 5 smooth stones. But John was unconcerned and cried, "Am I a dog?" And cursed David by his gods. Big John. Big John. Big bad John. But David was faithful, with a heart for his God, and he ran forward in the name of Yahweh of hosts, and slung his sling, and quickly retrieved the head of Big John. Big bad dead John. All right, enough about Goliath John Leroy Brown. But to understand Goliath, does help us to better understand and appreciate the heart and the faith and the courage of David. Oh, one more thing before we get to David. I want you to look at back to chapter 17 and look at verses 8 through 10 as well. In verse 8 it says, "And he stood and cried unto the armies," speaking of Goliath, "he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." Now, I thought we'd just take a little side note there. It's not really about Goliath and or David, either one. But don't you wish that that's how President Bush and Saddam Hussein would have settled their differences? You know, it couldn't have hardly turned out any worse than it did, or has to this point. If Bush would have lost and got himself killed, it would have only been his blood that would have been shed, rather than hundreds of our sons and boys and thousands of Iraqis. Yeah, but we would have ended up enslaved to a bunch of thugs. Well, what do you think we are now? But that's another story for another time. Back to the story, and let's go look at David now, starting with verse 24 and through 26. Having set the stage with Goliath, having seen the battle and having hopefully tried to get there ourselves, let's go back and look more intently at what it here says about David. In verse 24, beginning, it says, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, and the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying," verse 26, "And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Now, don't you just love David? Who's this Philistine anyway? He didn't say giant, by the way. He said, "Who's this Philistine anyway?" In other words, his size and his armor and his battle record, as far as David was concerned, had no bearing whatsoever on the situation. And because David, now listen to me, because David, being a man after the heart of Yahweh, didn't look himself at the outward appearance of man or situations or things, but instead upon the heart of the man. Yahweh wasn't, remember what Yahweh said to Samuel when he was looking to anoint David? And he thought it was Eliab, but Yahweh said, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature. And here was the man he chose that was David, a man after his own heart. And so David didn't look on the countenance of this man or his war record or the height of his stature. He simply didn't see it. And being that David looked at Goliath through the heart and through the eyes of Yahweh, he didn't see a giant at all, but a grasshopper, and an uncircumcised grasshopper at that. And he was probably thinking to himself something similar to what the Apostle Paul wrote to the Romans in Romans 8:31, when Paul said, what then shall we say to this? Isn't that what we're so many today? They're looking around and saying, what shall we say to this? Look at them. They're giants. Everything's against us. That's not what Paul wrote. He said, what then shall we say to all of this? If Yahweh be for us, who in the world can be afore us, giants or otherwise? And don't forget that it was David who wrote the following. In fact, turn to Psalms. Keep your finger there in 1 Samuel and turn to Psalms chapter 27. And beginning with verse 1, I'll read this if you're not there. It says, in Yahweh, he wrote David, a psalm of David, Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Yahweh is the strength of my life, and whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh. I think he was thinking back on Goliath, because that's what Goliath wanted to do, or at least feed it to the birds and the beasts of the field. He said, and when the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Verse 3, though a host, he said, not just one man, to David this was nothing. Because in his mind, though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise up against me in this, in what he had previously said about Yahweh being his light and his salvation, he says, in this will I be confident. And it was also David in Psalms 53:5 that says, there they were in great fear. Kind of reminds you of what it says in 1 Samuel 17:24 about all the other Israelites who, when the Philistines show up, and they trembled and ran in fear. Did they have anything to fear? No. Here's what it says. Psalms 53:5, it says, And there they were in great fear. Listen to this. David then says, where no fear was. Where there was nothing to fear. Job 32:5, you might remember, Job 3:25, you might remember this, that Job wrote, he says, for the very thing that I greatly feared has come upon me. You know, we got to control our fear, because it's our fear that usually brings it upon us. In fact, that fear then makes whatever we fear our God, does it not? Let me quickly go to Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 14. I believe this is exactly what Paul was trying to get through to the Ephesians and whatever they had in that day to fear or be concerned about. Ephesians chapter 3, and I want to begin with verse 14, where Paul begins a prayer for those people. And he says, for this cause I bow my knees unto the Father of our Lord Yeshua the Christ, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you according to the riches of his glory to be strengthened in your might. With might by his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that we, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints, now listen to this, what is the breadth and the length and the depth and the height, and to know the love of Christ which passes knowledge, that you might be filled with all the fullness of God. Verse 20 especially, now unto him that is able to do exceedingly, abundantly, above or beyond, New American Standard says, all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. I think David understood that. He says, God is able to do so much more than I would even ask him for in this battle. There's no reason for me to fear. And then, of course, in Psalms 56, 4, 9, and 11, David was also the author of the one who said, in God will I praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me, even if it does it. Verse 9, when I cry unto thee, then shall my enemies turn back. This I know, for God is for me. You notice his confidence in his faith. It wasn't this and I hope. It was this I know, because God is for me. And verse 11, in God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid of what man can do unto me. David was not about to let fear rule his life like it does in so many today. So many Christians today, of all people. But he wasn't about to let fear rule his life or to allow what he feared, therefore, to become the God of his life. David was not a man of fear, but a man of faith. Now, there are a couple other lessons, and praise God that he was all of that. Now, there are a couple other lessons that I want you to glean from these same verses in 1 Samuel 17. Verses 20 back to 1 Samuel 17. Just a few other thoughts, and we'll conclude this message and pick it up again in another one. But in chapter 17, verse 24 and 25, again, or 24 through 26, listen again, it says, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And then later in verse 25 or 26, and it says, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Now, keep in mind, those weren't just words, because David realized what the situation was and then he acted upon it. Note first that David was quick to see the job that needed to be done and that he didn't then hesitate at all. He didn't procrastinate about doing it. He recognized the problem and then immediately got about the business of complaining and grumbling about it. Right? No, that wasn't the case at all. Unlike us sometimes. That's what we tend to do. Instead of seeing a problem and acting and dealing with it, we tend to grumble and complain that it's got to be this way and life is so terrible. Well, listen, Paul addresses that very clearly. Philippians 2, 12 through 15, he says, wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do his good pleasure. Verse 14, and then he says, do all things without grumbling, or murmurings or disputings, or the New American Standard says grumbling and complaining, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation among whom you shine as lights of the world. You know, as Christians, if we're grumblers and complainers, murmurings and disputings, we don't shine as lights. We're not going to be able to accomplish and deal with the Goliaths in this day and age that need to be dealt with, because we're not a light to the world or the salt of the earth any longer. We're just a bunch of grumblers and complainers who don't believe in their God. Not David. David recognized the problem or the task at hand, accepted the challenge, and immediately got about the business of taking care of it. But what really made what David did so impressive, that made him stand out from and above the rest of the host of Israel, what really made it impressive was that this wasn't even his battle. This wasn't his problem or his responsibility to take care of. Goliath was Saul's and the arm of Israel's problem and responsibility. But that made no difference to David. There was a problem that needed solving, a mess that needed cleaning up. Start applying this. See where I'm going with it? Let's just not talk about David, but let's start applying it. Young people, think about this. Hopefully, as the older folks have got this figured out already. But didn't make any difference that it was somebody else's job, that somebody else was being paid for it. He saw that there was a mess to be cleaned up, and it didn't matter to him whether it was his responsibility or not, just as it was with the greater David. with Yeshua the Christ, who even when we were sinners, his enemies, took up the task of cleaning up the mess and took our place and died for us. Listen to me, if you want to excel in whatever you do, whatever it is you choose to do in this day and age, and hopefully whatever you do it under the Lord to begin with. But if you want to really excel at it, whatever it is, first take care of whatever it is that's your responsibility. And then when that's done, when that's taken care of, then look around you and on your own initiative, without being told to do so, without expecting to be paid for it, do whatever else needs to be done. And I guarantee you that you will be noticed by the ones, you may not be noticed in the fashion you'd like by the other employees, but the one who counts, the boss, will notice it. Because like David, you will stand out from everybody else, whose only concern is what they're being paid for. Proverbs 20:11, we've in our Proverbs time last night together as a family. Going through Proverbs chapter 20, and verse 11 was the verse that jumped off the page, and I didn't even think about it for this message, but it says, it is by his deeds, the New American Standard puts it this way, it is by his deeds that a lad distinguishes himself if his conduct is pure and right. It is by his deeds that a lad distinguishes himself, sets himself apart from the rest. I talked about how to my children, how they can do that, you know, that if their conduct is pure and just, seeing an elderly person who's having a hard time with getting over the curb because they're in a wheelchair, and for you to go and you be the first to take care of that situation, people are going to look, man, what kind of youth is that? They expect that of an adult. But the same goes with us. If we want to distinguish ourselves, it'll be by our deeds that are different from everybody else. David not only looked on a task that wasn't his, and this makes it even more impressive, but he didn't do it for himself, for his own safety or well-being, but rather for the sake of Israel, his people as a whole. Remember what he said? That last verse that we've read, that we've centered in on? He said, who is this uncircumcised Philistine to talk to me this way? He didn't say that. He said, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of Israel? The reputation of his brethren was more important than his own well-being. And he once again, like Yeshua, put his own life in jeopardy on the line for the sake of his brethren. Although you'd have never known it by the way he acted, that he even thought that his life was on the line, or by the way, or by the things he said. David was truly the epitome of what Paul wrote about to the Philippians. In Philippians 2:3-5, he says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, look not only to your own interest, but also to the interest of others. Have this attitude in you. Have this mindset. Have this heart like was the greater David's. Have this attitude in you which was also in the Christ Yeshua, who although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. And being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And therefore also God highly exalted him and bestowed upon him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Yeshua every knee should bow, just like Goliath's did with the previous anti-type of Yeshua, and those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Yeshua the Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. David was the epitome, being the former Yeshua, in a sense, the likeness of Yeshua, in that he didn't think of himself. He thought of his brethren and their reputation. He did it for them, not for himself. What lessons there are for us to learn from this young shepherd boy, a man after the heart of Yahweh. And I assure you, there's much, much more for us to learn and to apply in our lives from David, the man after the heart of Yahweh, that we too might be men and women after the heart of Yahweh, and that we too might just, can you envision it and get excited about it? That we too might just be used by Yahweh to take a stand and to slay, or at least cut down to size, some of the giants that we face today for His king, for our King, and for His kingdom today. I don't know about you, but it excites me. Just the potential of knowing that's a possibility, that God might use me like He did David to slay or to cut down to size some giants. We've got them around us. Might as well take a stab at it, hey? And I thank God if we will, and we will determine to be His men and women, the kind of men and women with hearts, the kind of hearts that God is looking for. Who knows? We've all got our own personal giants, and we can start with those. Take care of those, and who knows where it might lead us, what God might do with us. Amen? It's exciting. Let us be men and women after the heart of Yahweh. Let's stand, and we'll close this in prayer. Heavenly Father, we are thankful again to You and praise You, Father, this morning together for Your bountiful goodness to us, especially for Yeshua the Christ and His death, burial, and resurrection. Father, for without Him and without what He did, we would be nothing, and we would have nothing in which to boast and have nothing in which to be encouraged. But being that He resurrected from the grave and that He overcame all for our sake, we too can have His heart and His courage, and we surrender ourselves to You that You might make it so. Let us be useful tools for You. Let it begin with our hearts. Let it be with our lives that we would serve You. Let our lives be living sacrifices unto You, to live and to serve You, to proclaim the gospel of Yeshua the Christ for the sake of Your kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. Let it be so. We ask it in Yeshua the Christ. Amen.